Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, March 13th, 2007 Carrboro Board of Aldermen work session. We hopefully have a short agenda tonight. Item one is a work session on a land use ordinance text amendment to revise provisions related to child daycare homes and facilities. Mr. Manager.
Okay. At the board's January 23rd, 2007 public hearing, you considered a request to amend the text of the land use ordinance to revise several current restrictions on child daycare homes and facilities, as well as a staff analysis and staff response in the form of the draft ordinance. This item responds to comments made by the board at the public hearing, and Kendall Brown, our member of our planning staff, is here to give you all a presentation response to those issues that came up at the January public hearing. Kendall.
Good evening. Okay, as the manager explained, the public hearing was held on January 23rd to discuss the child care land use ordinance text amendment. And the Board of Aldermen raised some concerns. It says requested changes, but I'd like to change that to raised concerns and listed some ideas regarding the draft ordinance. There were 19 comments, and there was some overlap between the comments, so I've condensed them down to about 13, and I'll be going over those briefly. And then, thirdly, a public hearing for the revised draft ordinance could be held in May. Our hope is that we can discuss these concerns and talk with you some more to get some specific direction for the draft ordinance. And as I said, I'll go over each of these issues raised on the 23rd. One of them was comment about the population growth in Carrboro and the hope that the daycare, establishment of daycares could keep up with the population growth. And we'd just like to say, yes, we support additional daycares as well. Have some interesting stats here about the population growth in Carrboro. In the 2000 census, about 11% of the population was 9 years old or younger. Carrboro's population between the years 2000 and 2010 is increasing at about 700 people. Carrboro has 403 daycare slots right now, and they stay full, especially the ones that are more highly rated, the higher star system. And we also note that 50% of adults, working adults in Carrboro, work someplace other than Carrboro. And that's relevant in that daycares are provided elsewhere and in the cities where people work. The second issue raised was that there were few daycares applied for in the town of Carrboro within the town limits. And there was a question posed whether local regulations, local zoning regulations, were contributing to the fact that there are not more daycares being applied for. And in looking at the local regulations and then state regulations that govern the establishment and running of daycares, we are wondering if some of the barrier might be contributed to the state regulations, especially regarding the daycares over 8 children. We believe our draft ordinance proposed on January 23rd strikes a good balance between allowing the establishment of daycares and neighborhood protection and ensuring the safety of the daycares. Just to let you know kind of the history of what has been applied for since 1996, 2 to 3 daycare homes and 2 daycare facilities, that's 9 or more kids, were approved by the town. All but one are still operating. The remaining daycare facility was approved within 4 months, and that's still in operation. The regulations for the state regulations for daycares have less to do with zoning and more to do with things like staff-child ratio, staff training, programming, hygiene, medical care, medical records, food prep, toys and supplies, the physical environment, the list of regulations is quite daunting. But we'll be talking about this a little bit more in the following section. Issues 3 and 4 raised at the January hearing had to do with balancing the need for daycares with neighborhood protection and the appropriate level of regulation by the town. The appropriateness of daycares of 9 or more children, we believe, depends on the size and scale of the daycare and the neighborhood context. That is, things like the lot size, the lot width, the street width, the character of the neighborhood. And we believe the special use and conditional use permit process is the appropriate venue for weighing all those factors. Call your attention to some of the features we discussed before about what affects neighbors. This chart shows the different tiers of daycare sizes, and first is the number of children. The second column addresses how many staff would be required, and the staff number depends when you're getting to 9 or more children. Depends partially on the rating of the daycare, the number of children, the age mix of the children. So it's hard to be hard and fast on these numbers. The extra trips, when I say extra, I mean beyond the 10 trips per day normally generated by a single-family house. So in addition to the 10 coming from the house for a daycare of 3 to 8 children, there could be as many as 12 to 32 trips generated from the daycare. For 9 to 15 children, it would be beyond the 10 at the house, there would be 38 to 62, and then 16 and beyond, it's 68 plus. Now, normally, 16-child daycare would not be in a house, but just to give you a comparison there. The parking numbers, according to our zoning regulations, the parking number would be 3 to 6 required for a daycare home. 6 or more for a child daycare of 9 to 15 children. So if it is in a home, it would be 6 or more parking spaces required. If it's not in a home, it would be 2 less. Outdoor play areas, 75 square feet of play areas required for each child. So that's where these numbers come from. And so that's just to give you an idea of impacts on the neighborhood according to the scale of the daycare.
Kendall, can I just, could you, and under the staff proposal from back in January, the 3 to 8 would be by zoning permit, basically a staff level approval, is that right?
In residential districts,
in residential, yes. In residential districts.
Right.
And then in the same residential districts, the anything from 9 on up would be special use permit, meaning
right.
An approval by the Board of Adjustment. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to get clear about it.
In residential districts. In commercial districts, it's a little different.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Zoning permits and special use permits, there's kind of a need for a comparison of the time and submittal requirements between the two kinds of permits. Zoning permits are typically 4 to 8 weeks, sometimes more. $60 is the normal fee. A site plan, a narrative describing what the application is for and what the daycare would be like, and a fee is required. For special use permits, it's a 4 to 12 month process. That process is longer because it allows for public input, including notices put in the papers and public input at the public hearing and so forth, and also for review of stormwater management, so that takes a little longer. The normal fee for special use permits is $1,200, but for daycares it's $300. That was established several years ago, a discount for them. So going back to your question, the mayor's question, this is what the permitting scheme is like right now in residential districts. For 3 to 8 children, it's a zoning permit in all residential districts. For 9 or more, its special use permit in the residential districts, conditional use permit in the watershed residential. And this is what the permitting is like in the business districts. We can go back to that if there are any questions or concern about that. A new tier of daycare. So if a new tier of daycare were provided for in the land use ordinance, 9 to 15 children in a home, allowed with a zoning permit, we believe this would has the potential to create a significant impact on neighborhoods, and we would recommend that for the public hearing in May, a notice go out to neighborhoods, homeowners associations, neighborhood associations, and individual homeowners. So it would be about 3,000 mailings. Issue number five is the eight-child threshold, which we've sort of been talking about. There was some support last month for an eight-child threshold for daycares, and we think this is appropriate in neighborhoods, kind of equal to having a large family in a home. Issue six is encouraging small daycares. That's under 16 children is how I took that. We agree that daycares of all sizes are needed in the community. So we agree with you all on that. And issue seven is good neighbor measures for daycares in residential areas. Our draft ordinance was recommending that we have supplementary use regulations added to the land use ordinance, which would call for spatial separation, if there is a spatial separation of less than 25 feet from a residential structure between the structure and the outdoor play area, we recommend that the play not commence till 8:30 in the morning. And we recommend providing adequate vehicular turnaround area either in the public right-of-way in the neighborhood or on the site so that neighbors' driveways are not getting used and damaged in any way. Voluntary option of notifying neighbors within 500 feet. Those are the three good neighbor measures that we proposed with the draft ordinance. Issue number eight is talked about integration of daycares into residential areas. For example, in having daycares be in the clubhouses of new neighborhoods. And we support this concept. We believe that it's great to have daycares within walkable distance, having neighbors know who the providers are and so forth. Let's see. We think that integration could be assisted by having the public input process beefed up for small daycares. Issue nine is daycare set-aside space within new commercial developments. As we discussed, we can't require that under state regs. We don't have that power to require it, but we could offer incentives to developers, possibly in the form of density bonuses. Issue 10 is a notion that perhaps property values are increased due to daycares being on a site or in the area, and we don't really have data to back that up, but we agree that it would seem more attractive to some people to have daycares nearby. Issue 11 is the size of daycares relative to staffing levels. And again, this is regulated by state regulations. Difficulty of one staff person for 3 to 8 children in a home encouraged daycares of 9 or more children. So again, we're talking about diversity of sizes of daycares. Issue number 12 is the notion that new daycares would provide more employment. And again, this gets at staffing levels according to the sizes of daycares and their number of variables. Again, the number of kids, the mix of children, and the rating of the daycare. So that's hard to predict that many, anything firm. Okay. That's kind of a characterization of our present daycares. There are 5 licensed daycare homes at with a maximum of 8 children and 6 centers ranging in capacity from 11 to 105. I'll just note that the daycare of 11 children has 3 providers, so it really, the number of staff per children really varies according to mix of ages. Issue number 12 is promotion of state licensing. The state requires licensing of all 3 tiers of daycares, whether they're operated from homes or not. The town could regulate from a zoning perspective some daycare arrangements which are currently exempted by the state, and the state would still not require licensing, but we could regulate from a zoning perspective. The town could also require proof of a state license at the time of application for privilege license, but we imagine there are some people who, if they're not going to get their state license, they may not come in for a privilege license either. Issue 13, why regulate daycare size absent regulation of college students and rental units? And this gets this was said in the context of nuisance in neighborhoods and neighborhood protection. Short of redefining family, which would adversely affect a number of different groups, not creating nuisances, we recommend rather that nuisances be regulated using our current nuisance-related ordinances, such as noise ordinances and littering ordinances and the like. Whereas the establishment of a new business like a daycare, we have an opportunity to prevent a nuisance situation. So the next steps possible would be to make no changes to the current land use ordinance, or to adopt the draft ordinance presented at the January hearing, or give us some more direction as to specific changes you would like to see in the draft ordinance, notify the neighbors, and set a public hearing for May 22nd. And I'll stop there, but I have more materials if you have specific questions.
I have a specific suggestion to throw out to the board about this, and I guess my biggest reservation about this from before was that if basically the way the regulation works is that up to 8 kids is a very short approval process, it's a staff level review, and it's a simple matter, but 9 or more kids is a more involved process, that it creates a real problem for the kind of intermediate-sized operation. That is, having a lengthy review for, I think you said one of the facilities that's in Carrboro now has 105 kids in it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, whoever's operating that is, you know, that type of operation is operating at a scale that where you know, fairly close level of scrutiny seems really appropriate to me. The fact is that it is really difficult, and I see Michelle Rivas is here in the audience. She may want to comment on this situation. But my concern is that I think it's really difficult to make daycares and preschools economically viable when they serve 3 to 8 people. That the result of a 3 to 8 child operation is that there can only be one person who works there. There's simply not enough money in it to support more than one staff person, and that it puts a very significant burden on the one staff person who would work in such an operation. And so we as a committee, when we brought forward the recommendations that are in our report to y'all from last year or whenever it was, had suggested changing that threshold of 8, bumping that threshold of 8 up to 15. But the staff has made the point, and I think the Board of Aldermen is also concerned about this, that the impact of on neighborhood streets of preschools that would serve 15 children, up to 15 children, might be very significant. So I have a suggestion. It's specific suggestion, which is, what if we acknowledge that those daycares and preschools that would serve 9 to 15 children on residential neighborhood streets, yes, that would need some scrutiny, because on a residential neighborhood type street, it has a really significant impact. But if somebody wanted to open something that was going to involve 9 to 15 children, and their location was such that the driveway was on an arterial or collector street, in other words, if they were going to be on Greensboro Street, if they were going to be on Main Street, if they were going to be have basically their driveway have access to a street where the additional traffic is not necessarily likely to be such a burden for neighboring property owners, then maybe 9 to 15 child operation would still fall within a zoning permit, would have a relatively low level of regulatory review if it was on an arterial collector street. But if it's on a residential street, or what is the term of art there, neighborhood street? Anyway, whatever.
Local?
Yeah, something, right, local street. Anyway, something okay. less than arterial or collector street, mm-hmm. then it would be a special use permit review by the Board of Adjustment. That's my suggestion.
I want to throw out another idea, and it's really sort of a question, because obviously I've never set up a daycare center, so I don't know really what it takes to do that. But and this is not all to dismiss Mark's suggestion, but it seems to me that given everything that needs to be done to establish a daycare center for more than 9 children, you know, the play area in the yard, all the facilities inside and all that, that you could very well be looking at a 4-month process anyway, if that's what it takes to get the special use permit. And I'm wondering if it's possible for us to specify that daycare centers will get an expedited review when a special use permit is required, so as to shorten that time, and that we not have to find, you know, like be picking among characteristics of neighborhoods.
Well, let me address that, and I think this is an important clarification the board needs to understand. Some preschools operate for less than 4 hours a day, for 4 hours or less a day, 5 days a week. And I think, Michelle, you correct me if I'm getting the numbers wrong, but if you operate 4 hours or less a day, 5 days a week, then you are not regulated by the state.
That's right.
And it's not a question of people, you know, somehow getting around or pulling something over on the state. That's just the state has said something that only meets 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, is just we're not going to get into it. And this becomes part of the issue, is that particularly with, you know, especially with 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds, the 4 hours and less a day type of operation is, you know, particularly relevant. So I hear your point, but on the other hand, there's a significant number of daycares and preschools around that are not state regulated.
In that case, they would have a faster time to being able to open their doors.
Well, then, in that case, all they need is the approval from the town of Carrboro to operate. They don't need any.
They might need to go out and buy some toys.
Well,
that was kind of my point.
Well, and they would need a building to operate out of. But I mean, I guess the point being that, you know, state doesn't get
it. That makes sense.
I don't have at first blush, I don't have a problem with that. I think what is interesting to note is that there are no daycares in R20. And what does that say socially and demographically with regards to either the ease or the difficulty which when one can open a daycare? And most of the available land in Carrboro that is undeveloped is R20. Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes, do you want to modify the ordinance so that you can encourage the development of daycares in R20, or do you want all the development of daycares to be in R10, R7.5, and RSIR? And that's another question that we, you know, we're kind of moving around that question, but that's an issue. I would say it doesn't really matter what the size of the daycare is. Parents normally, I'm going to speak for myself, not speaking for other parents, you look at what the rating is. If it's a 5 or 4, you're looking to try to get your child in there, mm-hmm. if you can afford it. Mm-hmm. If it's a 3 or 2, you're thinking, got to do something different.
Right.
I mean, and, you know, and the state regulates that. And we could do the all-encouraging we want to, and there would be, you know, the issue of good quality daycare makes a difference when your child gets to school.
I wanted to piggyback on what Joel was saying, because the zoning also relates to the question of whether it's an arterial road or a collector. So that, you know, if the daycares are closer downtown, more likely the road could be a collector, but it could be on a residential street that is also a collector. I'm thinking of James Street and some other streets where there are they are older neighborhoods with that have you know, daycare preschool facilities where they've become collectors. They weren't originally collectors. They were originally neighborhood streets. And that relates to that zoning question. I mean, where do we see that these daycare currently exist, and where, if we're looking at incentives, then we're looking at new developments, which is a whole other question.
Well, that is literally a whole different question. But what I'm, and I guess it's a question of your perspective. But I don't see James Street as an inappropriate place.
No, I don't either. I'm just saying that
for a preschool. In fact, there is one on James Street.
Right, there is, and it's noticeable at 5 o'clock in the afternoon because of people trying to get to the post office and trying to pick up children.
And I know there's one neighbor who has called me several times who really hates that daycare, but I also know there's a dozen sets of parents who really love it.
Well, I'm not talking about that daycare. I'm just talking about collector roads.
I don't want to get too far into that one particular one either.
Right.
They have their permits and they're operating whatever.
Exactly.
But I guess my point is that, you know, at some level, we have to strike some kind of societal balance between. Preschools and daycares are not only an important and beneficial part of our community, but they're essential. And I think, you know, I realize the entire board, I'm certain the entire board agrees with that.
I don't think they're essential.
They're life-saving.
beyond essential. Essential may not even get to it. I got to say, the property where I've been involved in this process already has its permits, and none of these changes would affect it. But having gone through that process, you know, we wound up. It was a challenging process for us to go through, although we were only at the zoning permit level of approval, and. We tried to arrange it so that there'd be a morning program and an afternoon program, and the afternoon program would be basically an extension for older kids, an after school program for graduates from Mi Escuelita, but to get to that level of to have it become that large meant having it be going through a special use permit process instead of a zoning permit process. And everybody involved in the end decided that it just wasn't worth it. And it didn't happen. And the program doesn't exist. Not only doesn't exist at the property where it was considered before, but it still doesn't exist anywhere. Because our zoning ordinance makes it too difficult. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all I'm trying, maybe Ash Street isn't a good place for it, and that's fine. But what I'm saying is that I think if somebody wanted to open such a facility and do it on Main Street, on a residential section of Main Street, or on a residential section of North Greensboro Street, or Homestead Road,
that I just don't, to me, the neighborhood issues that are being raised here in the staff memo are simply nowhere near as significant, and the social benefits that we get from having more opportunities for preschools and daycares would significantly outweigh this. And so that's why I'm saying, so let's say that. Let's acknowledge that Ash Street is different than Main Street and say, you know, the rule might be different for arterial or collector streets or something like that. And I, you know, we could let the staff have a crack at it.
It seems to me that a lot of what would make this work has to do with truly enforceable good neighbor standards. You know, like not leaving the yard trashed, you know, and kind of getting people to have buy-in at that. You don't want like a trashy looking yard next to you. Maybe state very clearly that it's a Monday through Friday operation, that it's really not a weekend operation.
Right.
Have, you know, parents are notorious for where they drop their kids off. You know, they drop their kids off in the most convenient place, and, you know, that. So have really tight standards of, like, turnaround and where you're dropping off, and hold the daycare operators responsible for that. It's not that the daycare center would be in a neighborhood. It's how the daycare center behaves in a neighborhood that I think we need to concern ourselves with. I do like your division according to streets. I think that makes sense.
You know, I don't have a problem with it. I think, though, if we're going to do this, I would ask the board to look at what's going on in the northern part of town. Mm-hmm. I think that's a, you know,
very different.
It's very different. And I think we have to recognize, and I know there was a conversation a couple of years ago with whether or not we want to provide some incentives for people to say, okay, if you have a development that allows for a certain size of home daycare, then we are more inclined, you know, it's like a density bonus or something like that. You know, you may get one more house if you allow one or two more daycares. And I think that, you know, that might be another extension of what we want to do. Because I contend to you, you know, this is going to my argument about the waste transfer station and the carbon footprint and people driving around. If you don't require them up in the northern part of town, then you're going to have more people using carbon to get where they're going to drop off their children. So I think it would be fair to say that I would like to see, if the board would agree to it, some sort of staff work on a draft ordinance that would address those issues.
Including ways of encouraging developers to have their clubhouses, when they have clubhouses, set up so they're easily convertible to daycare centers.
Or a section of it, usable for.
Not necessarily to take away from that suggestion, but maybe just to go along with that, can I suggest maybe we would refer that general concept to the Northern Transition, what is it called? I'm on it. What is it called?
NSAPIRC.
I would normally agree to that, only though that because of the level of development, unless, of course, we have a moratorium, is approved, that we are losing the opportunities to add that type of incentive for people. So when they come before us, they know that the expectation is if you're going to have something with a carbon footprint, that it needs to be usable, just not on the weekends for a party.
Oh, right. I can't be both. Okay.
You know.
Well,
I mean,
that's what she's saying.
Right.
Well,
let's make
both of those referrals if we're going to do them.
But let me be clear that what we're basically saying is that there's a potential to zone differently for new developments for daycare, preschool, as opposed to older or already established Okay.
Right.
I'm wondering if
go ahead, sorry. Nothing like
that. let me recognize John. Then we'll come to you.
I think the report clearly indicates that the issue of daycare need or demand is going to increase, and also given the just looking at the demographics and the age demographics and folks, poor people will take care of their kids one way or another, with permit or without permit. They already do. They always have done that. Rich folks, they have the money to afford anything they want to, in here or somewhere else. And middle class, we struggle, right? With whatever we can afford. But I agree with you. In general, we need more childcare for spaces. I'm wondering on these requirements, which makes it harder and profitable. I agree with some suggestions that Alderman Gies mentioned. But also, we are just assuming sort of the current model of daycare. My dream is that, I live in Barrington Hills next to Wexford and Arcadia. Like in Arcadia, folks take care of their own kids. They walk, they don't drive. The more of these small facilities, I will walk my kids to a place nearby rather than drive, to drive 3 blocks or 5 blocks. The ideal is that the easier we make it, the more businesses, so you can actually walk rather than drive. So, or let's also add, bike facilities so the folks can actually, the staff. Now, let's don't assume for the zoning that every staff have to have a car. Let's give them incentives to drive, to add parking facilities and that the staff will drive. We'll take a bike. We'll drive a bike. And the other thing is, let's put some of the money that we have sitting here for economic development towards incentives for daycare centers, so that we get the money, the need is there, but I think folks in neighborhoods, most neighborhoods I think have children, and folks, it makes everybody's lives much easier and safer, and we always assume it's going to add more cars. But that's looking at, that's the traditional model. And I think if we promote this ideal of small daycare centers that are viable for folks to do, I think folks will, in the same neighborhood will try, will walk their kids, like they do. You see it, in McDougal School students. A lot of their parents in the neighborhoods nearby, will walk when it's not raining, our kids to school, so that's another idea of easing the burden on creating and supporting expansion of daycare centers.
So my question is whether we might refer Joel's question to, in terms of how to deal with it, to the staff. And what I'm thinking is that if we do set a public hearing for May 22nd, and if staff thinks they can address this adequately for that hearing, then they should do so. And if they can't, or if we don't, then let the NSAPIRC. Did I get that right?
Very good.
Talk about that. Talk about it.
Okay.
That just as long as there's a timeline, because I like timelines. I like due dates, just like the library.
They could do the NSAPIRC. PIRC definitely has a deadline. I'll say that. But I feel like if we could integrate this idea of location on arterial or collector street or something along those lines as a part of if we can integrate that into what is currently staff's proposal for another round that. I'm ready to have a public hearing on something along those lines if the Board of Aldermen is likewise willing to entertain that.
I'd like to see what with the streets that you come up with, what would be considered arterial or collector. just
well, and yeah, and maybe it should be presented as arterial or arterial and collector, and
right.
Let's take a look at what
right.
the difference between those two are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just kind of a digression, but it's been popping up in my head. Our population's growing in two directions. We're having a whole lot of people coming here, and just go to Weaver Street any day, and you'll see got babies all over the place these days. But we're also having people who have older family members who are moving home. Mm. So I wonder if we could just take the word child and children out of all of this and just have it as daycare homes, because I think there's going to come a time relatively soon when we can't do that.
Well, we can certainly do that. That's just a wholly different set of
it's a whole different set of regulations
issues and regulations and
we
can certainly cover that. I mean, is it whatever you want to do, but that's just a different
I can see a time when we will have adult daycare, elder adult daycare, parent care. I know we have that. Where we will have more of those, and where we could have some small private adult daycare centers. But if that's another issue, we'll deal with it at another time.
It seems to me that it is another issue, but it seems like a really legitimate issue too. I mean, and I think we do need to look at that at some point.
The question is, can this be covered?
I'm sorry, we already do have a use. I mean, there's three uses under daycare. Child daycare home, child daycare facility, which are the two definitions that you have here. And the third is senior citizens daycare. I don't know if that's the right
now, is
the
correct senior
term
citizen.
Anymore, but since I'm there, I don't have a problem with it. But,
yeah. Is the elder daycare included in this, too?
If no, it's not part of this ordinance. And essentially, it tracks almost, I must say, it tracks... Under the existing ordinance, senior citizens daycare tracks identically with child daycare facility, which is the larger of those, in terms of where special use permits are allowed and all that sort of stuff.
Which means that if you wanted to have even a small one in a residential zone, you would need a conditional use permit.
Yes.
Or special use permit from the Board of Aldermen.
Yes, it's Board the same. I mean, it's there. So the ordinance already has the classifications,
right.
And
so could we have that if it's changed could we make this applicable to both elder daycare and kid daycare?
Sure, whatever you want to do. It is a different issue, but it's not. I mean, it could certainly be adapted into this same ordinance. The only issue that I would have now is whether if you want to set a public hearing and then. Because we would have to then draft an ordinance that you would not have seen that would be set for a public hearing, and I'm a little less hesitant, I think, about knowing how to do that with respect to the issue Mark raised than as opposed to the issue that Joel raised, because providing incentives is something it's certainly doable. We just haven't thought about it. If you want to let us say hold the public hearing on an ordinance you haven't seen yet, that's fine, but I'm not quite sure what we would propose just yet. So the other choice, of course, to have it come back to you and then say we want to set it on this.
Well, you can, I mean, since I threw the idea in, we can separate them from, at least the incentive idea can be separated from the original idea so that people will have notice of what's going to be discussed. I'm not opposed to that. I just want the incentive idea to run along and we not be looking at it next year talking about, well, what happened to that incentive idea? When, the moratorium... development is.
How about if we ask the staff to bring us a proposal about an incentive idea, not as a part of this public hearing, but to bring us that type of proposal, so we could kind of talk about it a little more specifically. And
all right, that works for me.
Because we probably need to. Go back and forth on that idea a little further. I mean, the abstract sounds good. I think we all feel that way.
Okay.
Works for me.
Okay. We're asking staff to bring us a possible scenario for an incentive policy, and then we're going to schedule for
what date is it?
May 22nd, a public hearing on the staff's proposal with maybe some type of additional provision along the lines of taking into account whether it's on an arterial street or possibly also collector street. And we'll consider that if the staff can be ready for May 22nd. And
do we need to pass attachment A then?
I don't know.
This is a resolution. I'm assuming since today is the 13th, so.
You may want to,
we want these things included.
Amend that.
Okay.
What is it after?
Attachment A. This is like the first, right there. So to set the public hearing for the date that you talked about, May 22nd, I believe, with the changes we discussed, and that it would be referred to those advisory boards and we get the reports that they provide to us is normal.
All right. I'll take that as a motion.
Second.
Does this include elders?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. So that would also be in the amendment?
Right. It would include...
Okay.
It would include elder care, and it would include the proposition of allowing them on arterial collector roads.
Okay.
Are we... You're back?
I think I...
Okay.
That's true to me.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. And I take it that it was either a part of that motion or in any case by acclamation that the board agreed to Joel's proposal to request the staff bring us a proposed incentive.
Right.
I said policy, but whatever you want to.
It can be policy.
Procedure, policy, ordinance, something. All right. I think we're done with that topic for now, if that's... thanks very much. Item number two, a report on interim uses of the Martin Luther King Jr. Park property.
I think there's some people that want to speak on that.
Well, shouldn't we do it like we normally do? Go.
Because it's not a public hearing.
No,
yeah,
funny.
We don't speak. Well, let's have our staff presentation.
Yeah, some staff presentation, and then have people speak who want to speak.
Anita, if you would.
Okay. Purpose of this agenda item is to provide the board a report regarding information on cost estimates and other considerations if the Martin Luther King Jr. Park site is to be used as an open field, walking trail, and or community gardens prior to the formal park design process and construction. And Anita Jones-McNair, our Recreation and Parks Director, has a presentation to review the potential options for temporary use of the park property. Anita.
Good evening. Prior to your discussion of the interim uses of Martin Luther King Park, I'd like to outline some of the items that would be relative to the various options that are before you. There are five options in your packet, and Alderman Brown asked staff to take a look at a community garden, an open space for children to play, and also trails. Before I mention the options, I do want to note that in on your agenda for next week, the staff will be bringing a request to remove the house from that current property due to vandalism and also it being a very unsafe environment. The first option I want to cover is to take a look at constructing all of the fields and the trails designed in the 2004 master plan. Some of the factors that need to be considered in this process would be this definitely would require the completion of the town's permitting process. Parking is a consideration. Increase in park maintenance. Liability concerns. This definitely would be a significant budget impact. And I want to also note that if we maintain the 2004 master plan, this would be the only option that would remain after construction of the park. If you take a look at the current master plan, there is a multi-purpose field back here, an open field here, and also around the perimeter of the park is the trail and some looping trails inside the park. Going to the second option that was considered, it would be to create an open space in front of the existing house. Some of the considerations would be parking, increase in park maintenance, liability concerns, and also this would also be a budget impact. If you look into the park on facing the Hillsborough Road, it is the area right in front of the house. And this is just a picture to kind of help you see where I'm talking about. In terms of an aerial perspective, we're looking at the blue area back here as the multi-purpose field. For option three, we're looking at taking that same open field and adding a trail. And I want to note right here that most of the factors that need to be considered are going to be in all of them, all of these options. Parking is a consideration. Increase in park maintenance, the liability concern, and a budget impact. And looking at the aerial perspective, we're talking about, again, the multi-purpose field and the yellow dotted line in the back as the proposed trail. And incidentally, the areas on this aerial were decided based on staffing and a budget impact, and that's pretty much why these areas were decided. That's a very level and good grade at this point. The fourth option is to create a community garden. The considerations would be this would be a community-driven program. The completion of the town's permitting process would be needed, and this is the second option that would need to consider that. Parking, liability concerns, storage space for supplies and tools would be needed. The development of a management plan, I think, would be very helpful in terms of the coordination of this particular idea. And I want to note at this point that based on our 2004 master plan, this idea was proposed as part of the master plan process. However, it was not one of the amenities decided for this particular park. Again, based on the 2004 master plan, a relocation of the of this garden would be needed if this is the option that would go forward. Also, budget impact will be something to consider. And when you look at the area, we're talking about the southwest corner of the park right here in the front. The last option would be to leave the park as it is. It is scheduled for construction in 2010. Some things I want to note is at this point, Public Works is currently providing routine mowing to the property. And also, we do know that informal public use is happening at this time. Any questions?
I have some questions. Could you put an aerial picture up there?
Sure. Let me.
No, that one. In the back of the property, when it looks like the top of a crayon.
Sorry about that.
I have to pick them up and make sure the dog doesn't eat them.
The point of the crayon?
Yeah, the point of the crayon. I was wondering about that open space. And I'll just tell the board, I was considering more the backyard than the front yard because people can't run in the street in the front yard. But that's close enough.
Okay.
That's good.
Where those kind of trees are. And okay. Is there sort of like a gully and there needs to be grading right there where that's kind of
right
light
here?
To the
kind
left?
Kind of rolling.
Well, and again, I'm just saying that.
No, I mean, that's
yeah.
That's what it's like.
Right. But, I mean, you know, if it's not to, what's my best, you know, it, we're not trying to create a, we're trying to create a multi-purpose field. And I don't think it has to be a perfect multi-purpose field with grading. And so that, you know, my kind of idea, initial idea was to people to use the back, not the front, because of safety concerns. Mm-hmm. But to allow people to, you know, it again, it doesn't, my, you know, my kind of goal was just to have people just run around out there.
Sure.
You know, not misbehaving while they're running around, but sure. Running around, you know.
Fully clothed,
balls and stuff. Because, you know, in the neighborhood I grew up, there was a park which was not perfectly flat. And then if you hit the ball the wrong way, it went into the creek. So,
sure.
You know, you can avoid that. And so I'm thinking, what would it cost us to do a blue-sized field in the back where the crayon thing is? Because
right here.
It seems to me that seems to be much safer. And one of the reasons I know y'all want to...
It's in there.
Yeah. But
safer. Say again why it's safer.
It's away from the street.
Away from the street.
Because, you know, Hillsborough is a busy street,
right.
And it's a collector road.
Right.
And you know, there's no money in the budget to put a fence up there. So I'm thinking if you're in the back...
Okay.
You have a child, they're less likely, I mean, it's a long way up to the front.
Right.
So, but again, you know, I wasn't looking for a straight.
No, I wasn't implying that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That you were. Actually, we use it informally all the time. And the flattest place is like right behind where it says proposed trail.
Right.
That's a nice big flat, which is currently used as a
right.
playing field. Yeah,
right.
up in there.
Right.
People use that a lot.
So, I mean, and that would be sort of my proposal,
yeah.
Just daytime use because there are no lights out there. And, you know.
Could I just add a couple of things here in terms of,
mm-hmm.
of the layout here?
Mm-hmm.
There's no great magic here or
right.
a master plan as such, but we're trying to put some of the activities closer together. I mean, if you have
right.
you know, the multi-purpose field and you have small children, having the walking trail in close proximity
right.
to keep an eye on folks, that was part of the objective here. The front is flat. It does have an old woven wire fence around on almost all four sides of it. There's a strand of barbed wire that we would have to remove, but the fence will prevent balls from going through. There is also a border, a buffer of about 5 to 10 feet of small scrub trees and so forth.
Mm.
So I think from having coached
okay.
youngsters in soccer, unless we're talking 12 and over, if we're talking 10 and under, you know, I think we have a fairly good field in that respect. The other major thing we were trying to stay away from, the gully, because once we get into that, we start having stormwater issues and permitting issues, and the ball game changes considerably. So we were trying to get something up front
mm-hmm.
together, if you will.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just, you know, I don't know. Maybe I didn't communicate it well enough. I wasn't expecting any infrastructure changes to make it flat.
Well, I mean, if you're just talking about maybe increasing mowing, that's one thing. But if
right.
we start going around touching that,
right.
we're talking about something fairly significant.
No. I mean, I'm the very opposite. I was just thinking, oh, mow it every now and then so people can run on it. I wasn't thinking of.
And we're doing that
right.
now. And one of the options was to increase.
Mm-hmm.
The mowing frequency.
I also think that the further back you put it on that site, the more inclined people may be to try and use that roadway to get back up to it. And the closer it is to the sidewalk and the street, the more likely people will, you know, use bikes and,
right.
and walk.
Well, I mean, if people are, you know, the only, of course, you know, the safety issue, you know, and if that, the front, and because Hillsborough Road is a busy street, it's an arterial collector, and that was, you know, That was my only concern about, you know, moving it behind the house as opposed to in front of the house, but, you know.
Dan.
Anita, I was wondering what your sense is of the need, the community need in terms of, for this multi-purpose field, in terms of, like, your sense of the use of our other facilities and the program.
Okay. And when you ask that question, are you speaking of within the master plan or this current field that was proposed here in the blue area?
The blue, yeah. The okay. Blue, the temporary field.
Well, pretty much this was proposed based on Alderman Brown's request. In terms of, a departmental need, we probably could use an open field, but it's such a small area. You know, it's pretty much just enough to kick around a ball, very unstructured play. So we really haven't done analysis in terms of the need and how it would meet the needs of the department.
So it wouldn't serve any programmatic need you have, but it might serve some informal needs.
Right,
the community.
Exactly, very informal, and I think that was the initial idea.
Right, I mean, that was
an informal need.
You know, just to encourage people, one thing, if you have people there in the daytime, you know, playing, there's less likely you could reduce the amount of, you know, vandalism. I mean, there's not a lot of vandalism, I don't know, unless there is, for example, at Wilson Park, because there are people there all the time, either playing tennis or walking to the Adams Tract or walking the trails or having birthday mm-hmm. parties. And I think, you know, we have, you know, this resources, and if we can use it with, you know, I'm not expecting us to spend a lot of money, but if we can encourage people to use it, that also starts the discussion of, you know, when we get to, you know, it's time to develop it, then we, you know.
Sure. Well, let me ask another question about the proposed multipurpose field. Joel, as you were imagining that, and I think I like how you were imagining it, would we put, I mean, it seems like it would make, it would really improve that a lot to just put a couple of, like, soccer goal, you know, nets,
I mean,
or whatever at either end so that,
you know, they
and
could
kind of leave it at that.
You know, if they wanted to, you know, they could. I think the idea is that people sort of are allowed to, they could use it, you know, if you wanted to, you could run around, not that I would, but you could run, you know, the perimeter. I'm not much of a runner. You know, I'll walk it, but I won't run
no.
it. But, you know, if we can just, I mean, it is a resource, and to
okay.
to have people to say, okay, you can come out and use it for these purposes, all legal, none illegal, and, you know, leave it at that, I think.
Okay.
I want to be clear about how the options are really different regarding the multi-purpose field,
okay.
because it seems like you could have a different variation on the combinations. In other words,
I think there's lots of mix and matching.
Exactly.
Right.
Here, that's my point.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm asking is option two has the
field only.
The field only. Option three is the field and a trail, correct?
Yes.
Option one is field and trail. So
yes, based on the 2004 master plan.
Right. So what I want to know is how is option one different from option four?
I think option one is a bigger trail.
Yeah. Option four is the community garden.
One and three. I keep forgetting.
Okay. Option number one would be, and number three, we are looking at, a larger scenario, and we're looking at complete construction of the park.
Okay.
And option three, we're just talking about just doing very minimal work to keep it mowed and maintained so the community could use it. But in option one, we're talking about completing the master plan process, which was about a $374,000 project. Based on the grading and all of that. So we're talking about these two fields right here,
yeah.
but also the fact that they need to be scale to regulation,
right,
so on and so forth. And when we talk about the trails, we've got some paved trails in this plan and some unpaved trails in that plan. So it is a little different in terms of just minimal.
When I'm looking at the expense, if you just go back to that, the crayon view.
Sure.
Okay. You know, it would seem to me that an option six could be the proposed multi-purpose fields and the community gardens, because, you know, I'm thinking that one option that's not on the table is to have the open space for the fields and to have the community garden. I don't see that as a potential option.
Can I make sure I understand the option? Are you talking about the temporary open field, or are you talking about the
multi-purpose field?
The one from the master plan.
You're saying doing two and four.
What's in blue, right.
You're saying doing two and four,
right.
Options two and four.
So right, like doing two and four together.
Oh, okay. That would cost, give or take.
Are you finished?
Thanks.
Anita, I have a question, or maybe this is a question for George. I'm not sure who, in terms of the community garden, and you talked about some of the issues in terms of the permitting and whatnot to establish that. The time frame to accomplish that, if there were people wanting to use the garden space for this spring planting season, is that possible, given what needs to be done to permit and prepare the space?
Well, based on what we're proposing, I'm really not certain in that the community would be the driving force of whether that happens or not. It's my understanding Public Works would not be part of the process of preparing the community gardens.
Okay.
So I guess it would mean whether the community, would have their management plan together and ready to move and then begin working on the various space.
And what is the permitting process then that you referred to? Is that the board authorizing it?
Well, no, it would have to go through planning because it would have to entail some work on that particular land.
What?
Okay. So you're saying two different things. You're saying that it's just the community volunteers, but then
it would be the community. Now, are you talking about option number four?
Option four, right.
Okay. The community gardens, based on what would need to be done, it's my understanding, and I don't know, maybe Marty could answer it a little better, but based on what needs to happen to that particular land and also the fact that we have to run the water line and right now there's a water meter there, but there's a water line, but that has to run to the site. Spigots have to be included. And so based on that, all of that and preparing the land, it would have to go through some form of the permitting process through the planning department.
Steve, can you elaborate on that?
I'm going to ask Marty to come up. It would require a land use permit issued by the zoning administrators, as I understand it, Marty. So it's a separate issue from the community could be the driving force behind moving forward with the garden, but there's still a permitting process that would be involved, whether it's us doing it or Susie Smith and the community doing it.
Sure, and I'll ask Mike to weigh in if I veer off track here, but what we talked about all along since the idea came up was that the way the ordinance is structured, there's a degree of intended use behind what you're asking. And if you simply set up a field and people are informally using it now, there's not necessarily any intended use behind the board's direction to staff. As you add layers to what would happen on the site, you increase the intended use of the property, and at some point it requires a land use permit. I don't think the staff has come up with any firm conclusion that, you know, if you add A or you add B, you definitely have to get a land use permit. But we did just talk, again, broadly about each layer takes it closer to requiring a land use permit. The main thing, I'm sorry, Jack, just one other point. The main thing that would probably need to be addressed, stripping down all the requirements of the ordinance, as you add intended uses to the property, you need to provide for parking somewhere. Just to boil it down, that's probably the main thing that would need to be addressed.
So, Marty, I don't know if you know enough at this point to answer my question, but, you know, if there was interest in the community, in the garden space, for this year's planting season, say, to be able to prepare the ground and plant something by the end of June, could what we need to do be accommodated in that time frame?
Well,
what do you think?
I think it probably could. I should be careful or just ask Mike to correct me if I say this wrong, but if it happens informally, again, it's public land and there's not necessarily a park per se there. People just go out and on public property choose to plant there, and the board doesn't enforce tell people to not do that, as it were. In terms
of getting something, we don't want them to grow certain things.
Buddy, I'm going to interrupt for a second because I think it's going to have to be more formal than that. I mean, we're talking about running a water line and doing certain things that
all that would have to happen.
Set it up for a garden, so it's not just something that's just going
to
be more formal.
Okay, hold on, just say, Jackie.
Mark, I'm still trying to get an answer here.
Okay.
So, if we need parking, you know, even rough out parking, and if we need a water line, you know, so then that's going to require permitting through your department. Is that's what you're saying, Steve, right?
Yes.
Okay. And can that accommodate use of the garden this spring?
In other words, is that something that can happen in the next 2 months?
Yeah, because I think that bears on, you know, kind of how we treat that question.
I don't know for sure. I'm really not sure how to answer that. I mean, I guess I want to say it can happen if the resources are there and the desire is there to make it happen, but it's already, mid-March approximately, so I hope it's fair to say it would be difficult to make all that happen by June.
Well, you'd want to plant in April.
Okay. I don't know how long it takes to actually, if you could get the permitting in order, I don't know how long it actually takes to put a line, like a water line like that in place. That's part of the reason I'm a little
right,
unsure.
Jackie?
It's just a simple garden. There's water out there because there's water to the house. You know?
There's a water meter.
Yes.
There is a water
meter. So there's a water line out there. I think we need to keep things as simple as we can. I know there's always layers get creative, but we just need a little garden. And there is precedent for this. There was a community garden in the Lloyd Broad Street Park for quite a while. And we didn't have any big regulations about it. All we did was we went in and plowed up the land and said, you want a garden in it? Have at it, you know. And people gardened for a little bit, and then they stopped gardening in it. So, I mean, I don't think we need to create infrastructure. It's land that's not being used, and there are people that want to garden it. We've got to be able to come up with a simple way to make that happen.
Okay. I take it you three, I don't want to stereotype anybody, but I take it you three gentlemen in the front row are here about this gardening matter. We don't normally receive public comment at our work sessions, but can you, between the three of you, nominate one person to come and comment on this, if the board will entertain it?
No, I don't want to hear from
Mark, Michelle might want to.
Michelle may want. Well, you get. Come on up here. Maybe you'll say everything she's thinking, Sammy.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity to do this at your working session. We're basically a group of Carborough citizens who had started a community garden in front of the recyclery, and unfortunately have had to discontinue it because there are issues with the landlords. Just simply because they didn't want people from the community on their land, not for any other reason. So we've been looking for another place to do this, and we've spoken with Michelle Rivas about the possibility of collaborating with the Orange County Partnership for Young Children. And there's a lot of energy in the community. We had a lot of interest in the community garden when it was happening. One of the things that we are looking at this plan that we would suggest is that the because community garden, for the reasons of the creation of the soil itself and the community that you build around the garden, we would like the possibility of perhaps starting a temporary one with the possibility of it being continuous or permanent. And seeing that the master plan already has that middle section as a multi-purpose field for whatever kind of usage or a recreation anyone finds fit. And then there's this smaller one. It seems kind of redundant that there be two. And our proposal will be that this community garden instead be in this corner up here, because then if it was successful and by the time that the master plan is executed, there'd be the possibility of continuing its usage and taking advantage of all the work that's been put in both the creation of the soil and the community around it. And I understand that in this corner, there's already plans for a wet spray ground. So that's where we're coming from. And I really think that we don't need that much infrastructure, seeing all the what's written up for the amount that it would cost to do what's proposed here. We would actually be saving everyone a lot of money because we're just going to be throwing seeds and collaborating with the partnership and helping children out. And if Michelle, I'd cede the floor to her. Thank you.
Mr. Manager,
I just want to make one point to the board as you all think about the idea of a community garden and whether it ought to be a temporary thing or a permanent thing is just a reminder to everybody that there was a very long and public process in the creation of that 2004 master plan. And I would just caution the board that, and ask you to think about if you were thinking about this becoming a permanent fixture on that site, that there ought to be some thought given to that because of the number of people involved to put a lot of hours into the development of this 2004 master plan. And that idea of the community garden was vetted during that process, and it was a decision made by the community at that time that that was not the most important thing to go on that piece of property.
Okay. Michelle, if you would speak.
Do we have a more updated map of the preliminary master plan? I thought we had made some changes to this a while ago.
Discussion, yeah. But no changes.
Okay.
Good evening. It's nice to meet people I've just talked to on the phone, but I just wanted to share that the partnership, you know, is committed to the concept of community gardening as a way to help increase, you know, access to healthy foods and physical activity for children and families. And we've already got a commitment from the Carver Elementary to put a community garden there. So we're very excited about this additional community garden because it's got a different sort of flavor and access to it. And, you know, our resources, which we have some now, and we hope to have more. We've got two grant proposals in, which we'll hear in the next 30 to 60 days about. You know, we have budgeted, depending on the grant, somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 for each garden site. So we can help offset your budget costs. We don't need to be involved in the design of that. So, I mean, we would leave that to the staff, of course, and the community volunteers to figure it all out. But the resources, we can bring some to the table for you. So I hope that will help your decision there. I also want to say that I've spoken with Cooperative Extension and the Master Gardeners Program. For all of our projects that we're involved with, they are more than willing to come do site analysis, help garner other resources to prepare the site. So I think there is a lot of energy and excitement about this, and we're excited about your entertaining this possibility. So let me know what else we can do for you, and we'll certainly keep you posted on when we can make our resources available.
I was just going to propose that, based on this discussion, that we consider a potential option six, that is the proposed multi-purpose field and the proposed community garden. And the reason I'd leave out the trails at this time is that Adams Tract is in the process of developing fields. Trails.
When you say the multi-purpose field, you mean
A.
What's described here as $150,000?
No, that's option one.
Well, I'm asking her if that's what she means.
No, I'm talking options two and four, combining two and four and making six. How convenient.
The teacher comes out. So two is basically the increased field mowing arrangement there.
Right.
Okay. All right. And so you're saying increased field mowing and the community garden.
Yep.
Okay.
Which is about $8,100.
And Randy, are you sympathetic to Jackie's suggestion, which, as I interpret it, means that rather than running an additional water line, that the people using the garden might just get some hose and
exactly, and I know it'll work.
Except they're tearing the building down.
Let's not try to decide that right now because it may be impacted by what we're going to do with the building, if anything.
Right.
But correct. I think we would all be open to that if that's a possibility. That might be a possibility.
Can I just say something? Oh, I'm gonna have to get on. When I'm leaning toward my environmental thing, are we going to use potable water? You know, that's the question we need to ask ourselves. We talk about the environment and we talk about the resources that we have, but are we going to use potable water? And you need to ask that question before we decide to run an $1,100 line. Not that $1,100 is a lot of money, but are you going to use potable drinking water when we're supposed to be, like, at the head of the class for environmental use? I mean, I'm willing to spend $500 to collect rainwater, but I'm not necessarily so that I'm going to sit here and tell you that I'm for you spending $1,100 for a water line, when I know that people garden without a water line all the time. They're just like, you know, it either rains or it doesn't.
I think putting money towards rain barrels to begin with is a fine idea. I don't have a problem with that if it works.
Let's leave it to the staff. We'll put that out there as another thing that the staff and
as a suggestion.
These guys look like they're into rainwater. I think it's a great point.
You know, it's got a 71-year-old mother.
Let me ask you a question. I think it would be important to. I mean, as an agronomist, I can tell you that, I mean, who decided to put the community garden there was based on the size?
The community gardens here?
Mm-hmm.
We took a look at the site, and what we tried to do was the less impact in terms of needs for the land and whatever use that needs to happen. And, again, the house is right here. The water line is near the road, so we thought, you know, if the line has to run, you know, it would be easier to run a little closer here. So, I mean, again, we took a look at basic impact in terms of where we propose these various sites.
Because, I mean, we're talking about something like the multipurpose field, kind of a grassy, flat area. We're not talking about...
And that's what that area is right there, grass. Flat. It's one of the best areas in the park at this point. You know, very minimal impact in terms of getting it prepared.
And I'm just thinking it's always helpful, you know, to kind of check out the soil and see if it's the best drainage or the best soil or the best site to grow anything. Or
sure.
Maybe we can also have it. How are they shooting range, you know?
He has a degree in this stuff.
But, it should be, we can have the site and then decide that nothing grows there. But, I mean, the beautiful thing is basically we're going to cultivate a lot of relationships and goodwill. If we can get the extension agents to come and, you know, do a soil test and also look at the logistics of that stuff.
Okay, well, I will take it that Randy made a motion for this resolution marking options two and four.
Can I make an amendment, though? The issue of the water line is open until we get a report back from staff.
Yeah, we're going to explore either using rainwater collection somehow, or whether there's an existing existing spigot from the house that can be used, either one of those, possibly.
Is that house?
Quick question.
Potable water.
For the master plan, do we have any, have we considered to reforest any of those bald spots, or are we just going to build on them?
Bald spots?
Are we plant? Are we going to, are we planning to plant trees in there?
Can you, yeah. Some.
Or some bushes?
Yes.
Trees or bushes? Probably bushes, right?
Some would be trees and some would be bushes. And that's real preliminary. I mean, we haven't really gotten to the design, the actual design phase.
Well, you see all that greenery that's shown there schematically along the what's currently the parking area there.
Mm-hmm.
There's none of that exists right now, so that's all plantings of some kind.
Well, I'm thinking this would do also a great reforestation project, you know, for the community, which could be part of
transition
of the temporary garden.
Recreation.
Yes.
Assuming, and I don't know if this has been definitively decided, but it seems like there that would require some sort of zoning permission, either as an agricultural use or a town use or something, being this formal. Is it, assuming that there was a requirement for a zoning permit of some kind, who would be the applicant, or what do you envision? Would you envision this would be a town-initiated thing?
Yeah, I think the town of Carborough would be the applicant.
Okay.
To my way of thinking on that.
Just like the community.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and that would necessarily mean that it's a staff-level review, and I guess,
yeah.
You know, I would like the staff to explore if there are any costs of any note from that, whether there's a way that we can collaborate with the Orange County Partnership for Young Children and meeting some of the budgetary considerations.
Would the town of Carborough then have to be part of a grant application? Okay.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
But we helped prepare it already, actually. Okay. All right. So it's been moved with those different understandings. It's been moved and seconded that we pass the resolution with options 2 and 4 marked. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Thank you very much. I appreciate the staff being very responsive to the Board of Aldermen's request to look into the different possibilities here. Appreciate it. We are on to a review of nominations and selection of Volunteer of the Year. I wonder if we can resolve this matter by 9 o'clock.
Yes, I think so.
Well, we can.
Mm-hmm. You know, 9:47. One person really, to me, kind of stands out in this crowd, and I bet that's true for a bunch of us. It's notable that we got 4 nominations total, and 2 of them were for one person. and I would be eager actually to support any of these people who were nominated. They're all excellent. But is there a motion?
I'll move. Specifying Jackie Halpin, unless someone else needs to do.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that we name Jackie Halpin the 2007 Carborough Volunteer of the Year. I know Jackie Gist was kind enough to bring to our attention the need to resurrect this process, and I know all the members of the board appreciate that.
Can we just also just acknowledge what wonderful people the other two nominees are, mm-hmm. and maybe we could sort of acknowledge them at the you know how they do at the right. Academy Awards. You yeah. acknowledge the nominees and the winner. So I hope that we would do that.
I think that is an excellent idea. I expect
no
to see
gift bags.
Expect to see both of those names in the future at some yep. point in this process. All those in favor of naming Jackie Halpin the 2007 Carborough Volunteer of the Year. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Move. Thank you, adjourn.
All right.
Great volunteers.
Second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.